Imagine a newborn baby who was screaming. You wouldn't like, you might want to shut the door and like walk away from it and just let until it stops screaming. However, we know that the compassionate response is to hold that baby through it, right? Hold that baby and say, I'm here. I'm here.
Welcome to LifeWorks, where we talk about life and work and making it work. I'm Hannah Greenstein, a From Mompreneur on a mission just like yours, to live the mompreneur life that brings me feelings of balance and inner peace and joy. Here, I hold space for you in the many roles you play as a From Mommy business owner. Join me for support, mindset, techniques, and tools around productivity, focus, and work-life balance so you can feel in balance and at peace. If you can find excitement and joy at work and at home, you will thrive in the roles you play and feel fulfilled by your life's work. And that's what I want for you. So let's get started. Welcome back to the podcast. In today's episode, Rena Reiser, who helps women tune into their inner wisdom to create lasting change, shares some incredible insights, perspectives, and tools that just, for me, resonated. They felt so right. They fit with the way that I've experienced the world. Like, it just made so much sense. And I hope that it is able to do the same for you. A lot of what she shared was new for me and maybe even a little bit foreign or uncomfortable. And it's definitely a work that I think I'll need to explore and journey towards more. I'm excited for you to listen and to hear what she had to share and see if it does the same for you. Enjoy the episode.
Okay, I'm so excited to get started, Rena. If you could just start by sharing with us what you do and how you got to doing what you're doing today.
Okay, sure. So what I do is I help women create change from the inside out, and which sounds super cliche and so super like what everybody's talking about, but it's hard to put into words what I do, because what I do is less of a cognitive process and more of an experiential process. And so when we try to put it into cognitive words that we're already used to, it just sounds like everything else. So it's something that is, it's hard to explain exactly what it is. But I think we've all been there where we have been trying to make all kinds of changes in our lives, myself included, and getting stuck because I keep trying the typical ways, which are absolutely amazing. Like, they're really fantastic ways of trying to create change. However, there's a whole level inside of us that we don't access when we use typical cognitive tools to try to create change. So you asked me how I got started on this. It was really my own journey. It was really my own journey of trying to make my life better. You know, like all of us are just trying to improve, trying to, whether it's working on ourselves, whether it's working within relationship, whether it's working on our relationship with Hashem, We're trying to improve ourselves. And I would find myself, you know, Yom Kippur after Yom Kippur, struggling with the same things. Relationship, like within the relationship, you know, day after day, struggling with the same kinds of things. And burning out, having a lot of chronic pain, certain medical issues, and really struggling with trying to figure out, like, okay, like, this doesn't make sense. Like, there's something not working here. And either I'm doomed for a failure, or there's got to be another way of doing this.
Yeah.
And I've always been somebody who was connected to my body. I always loved dancing. I used to do gymnastics as a young girl. Always loved like being in my body and moving. But as a From woman, as I got older, it was harder and harder to have access to those kinds of things. And so that part of myself kind of ended up on the back burner. And my cognitive capabilities had lots of room to shine. And I was a programmer for a while. That was my, you know, first profession before I did this work. And there was a lot of space for everything from my neck and up, but there was less space for what was happening below my neck, my heart, and the rest of my whole self. And so when I discovered these tools that can be put under the general umbrella of mind-body tools, somatics, there's a lot of, you know, catchphrases out there nowadays to put it under. And when I discovered this world, that's when things really started to shift for me.
This was a completely personal journey that you took, and you experienced the transformation. And then some point was like, I have to share this with others.
Oh, I wish it was so like perfectly packaged like that. I would say that I've been evolving and growing as I've been doing this work. So right. When I first started shifting my work from programming to coaching, so I was doing much more cognitive kind of coaching with like a drop of the mind-body work. Mm-hmm. As my journey itself continued and evolved, I started adding in and then training in more and more mind-body tools and then adding more and more of those back into my work. So as I continue to grow and change, so does my work.
Yeah.
Which used to really bother me, by the way, when I saw other people, like, again, when I was like stuck in like my cognitive patterns of doing things, and I would see different practitioners out there and I would see them evolving and shifting and changing from like one thing to the other, I'd be like, could you like stop and just make up your mind about what you like to do? You know, I'm trying to follow you for like X, Y, and Z, and you're doing, now you're like totally shifting to this other direction. Like, come on, I want some consistency here. And then I started doing it in my own life and I said, oh no, oh no, but I understand why. I like so appreciate why they made those changes and why they had to shift into this other way of doing things, because what they were doing before just wasn't enough for them and for their clients. And so the deeper I go into my work, the deeper I'm able to take my clients into their work, and the deeper shifts with Hashem's help are able to happen.
Yeah, I relate to that so much. Like, as things change for you, it changes the way that you are gonna show up at work and do the work. I actually just last night was reading an email from a coach who was sharing, like, on a little bit of a twist, but she was talking about showing up and not waiting for when you're ready, because you're never gonna be ready. And what she was pointing out was the perspective that you cannot get to that, you can't get to that later stage without this earlier stage.
Right.
So you're like, I will show up when certain things fall into place. And maybe one day those things will fall into place, but only if you're going to, like, only if you're going to be willing to go through the process. And so you're going to show up as a less experienced coach so that one day you'll be a more experienced coach. Like, it can't happen without those earlier steps. I would love to hear, as you did more of this work in your personal journey, how it changed you showing up as a business owner.
Love that. Okay. Well, I can paint the picture from before and after.
Yeah.
Well, not after, because there's no after yet, but you know where I am now. Before was very much an experience of, first of all, I'm going to start from the marketing perspective, like getting clients. Before was very much like, I have to get clients. I have to make this amount of money. I need this number of clients. I have to market this way. Why isn't my marketing working? What am I doing wrong? I'm following the formula. What's going on here? And why is this not changing? And that shift has shifted into, every time I find myself kind of going down that path, which those are the patterns that are still within me. They're not going to, like, my brain has wired those pathways. They're not going to disappear, but I'm creating new pathways in my brain where my brain is taking on other ways, more beneficial ways of relating to business and marketing and making money. So, but every so often it will default back to those older pathways. So when I find myself going back to those pathways, I find myself taking a deep breath and relaxing my jaw, relaxing my shoulders, relaxing my belly. And breathing in and saying, remember, Rina, this is just hishtadlus. Hashem runs the show. And Hashem has all the money and all the clients in the world to send you. And money flows in, money flows out. Like, Hashem is taking care of you like he has always taken care of you. And I feel it. Like, it's not like, it's not just me saying it. Like, I'm really feeling it from the inside out. I've done so much work on that so that I'm able to relax into that. Truly, truly relax into that. And trust that, you know, some months are better. Like, I make more money. Some months I make less money, like every business owner that's out there. And anyone that says otherwise is, you know, probably not telling the full truth, because there are ebbs and flows in business. And just being able to truly, truly feel that from the inside out, like truly feel that support from Hashem, like really feeling like he is truly taking care of me, truly taking care of me from the inside out.
Wow. I, again, just resonate so much. I don't know exactly yet when this episode will air, but I'm like at the, I don't want to say tail end because it doesn't end, but like at the tail end of an experience that I chose to approach as like a Bitachon boot camp, where I was just like, I'm not going to go through this. I'm going to use this time to integrate Bitachon work because,
well,
and this is something I really want to talk to you about. We know so much of what the right thing is to know, to think, to do. And then I mean, so many people never get to that integrative stage. It's, I don't think it's something that's typically taught. It's really like, that's where the work is. It's really, really hard work. And it just going through this experience and like just really like spending so much time thinking about this and working on this, like being in that space of, like you're saying, you're able to relax into that other way of thinking. It's because you created for yourself that other way of thinking. Like you first have to do that groundwork, which, I mean, I don't know if there's a better word to describe it than excruciating. Like it's real work. And like, so laying that groundwork just had me thinking so much about how much we know. Like, we know Hashem runs the world and we know Hashem is providing and we know that the money is completely dependent on his will, not on our hishtablus whatsoever. And then how that doesn't reflect in the way we think about our work when it comes to it. I heard an episode of your podcast. I think it was your husband that said this. It was an episode you recorded together with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the one that said this, but the sentiment was something along the lines of, the cognitive approach is amazing and it works kind of based on the assumption that you're always showing up with your best self.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like so, so taken by that, because something that I've done a lot of work on in the last 2 years and a lot of talking to different people about is that gap between like that gap, which is integration. Right. I started out thinking about this in like the realm of midos work. So I know what good midos look like. I know if I was that person with perfect midos, how I would respond in this situation. But I'm not that person with perfect midos. Like, or I'm like really tempted to not respond like that. Now what?
Right.
And what I basically was left with felt like two options. Either respond the way I want to, act not with the ideal midos, or act with good midos and inside simmer and be resentful and wish, like in a very, very specific scenario where I really, like someone who did something that I found really not pleasant. And I knew that saying something would not be beneficial. It wasn't a time to speak up, but I wanted to. Like, I wanted them to know that what I didn't like what they did. And I felt like they deserve to like feel that guilt, right? Like, I should tell them that they hurt me so they feel guilty because like they hurt me, so I want them to feel guilty. And I don't know, maybe like I shouldn't be publicizing this. I think like this, we all experience this, right? And I was like, but I know that the person that I want to be wouldn't say anything. I'm going to bite my tongue. I don't want to be biting my tongue. I want Isn't midos work internal, like you're saying, from the inside out? So how do I get to that internal? Like, how do I make that internal change? And so I've spent so much time just kind of trying to figure it out on my own, because I didn't feel like I was finding the tools or the resources. And so I've done it like in the midos. And then I more recently did a lot of work in the Bitachon space. And I've been speaking to other women who really, really express the same sentiment. So I would love for you to just talk about this, like what's missing? How do we change who we are so that our actions reflect it instead of acting in a way that doesn't really reflect who we are, which in the long run just doesn't really pay off?
I love this question. And it's something that I'm starting to research. When I say starting, I would say like the last year and a half or so, I've really been like, I want to see, I know all the answers from a secular perspective and, you know, secular psychology, and they've done amazing work. Like, truly amazing work. We can talk about neuroplasticity and how that how we create changes in our brain. We could talk about the like creating change from the inside out, the mind-body tools, somatic tools. We could talk about all that. And they work to a point. However, as from Jews, I believe that we have to have the foundation of, well, what do Chazal say about this? Yeah. I mean, what's the Torah coming to teach us about this? And so that's really what I've been working on over the last year and a half. It's like a passion of mine, really, truly. Like learning is one of my biggest values. It's one of the things that like when I learn, I feel alive. It gives me so much vitality in my life. And so I love learning Torah sources and I love diving into them and finding like, you know, I thought I would have to look in all kinds of like, you know, esoteric kinds of places, but I'm actually finding answers in some of the most common Svarim that like are available in every single Jewish bookstore, like from bookstore, you know? So I'll start with the Sifsei Chaim. He really, really talks about there are two Svarim on like two volumes on Midos and Avodas Hashem. And the first Mida that he talks about in the second volume is Menuchas HaNefesh. And he talks about what is Menuchas HaNefesh and how do we go about acquiring it. So we have to define it and try to understand what it is. And he goes, you know, these are all based on Vadim that he gave. So it's not like he wasn't writing like a kuntres, like a pamphlet on Menuchas HaNefesh. This was taken from different classes that he gave over his lifetime that his son-in-law took and put into the Sefer. So it's not like from point A to point B, but more of like a general understanding of Menuchas HaNefesh. And what he talks about in there is how Menuchas HaNefesh is really the foundation for all of our midos. It's really at the root of everything. If a person's not in Menuchas HaNefesh, in a state of Menuchas HaNefesh, their Avodas Hashem isn't optimal. Their midos are going, their bad midos. He brings the mashal of a cup of wine that has sediment in it. And if you allow the sediment to fall to the bottom of the cup, then you have a beautiful cup of wine that you're able to drink. But if you shake up the cup, then all of the wine becomes unusable. And he says that's what Menuchas HaNefesh is. Menuchas HaNefesh is being able to allow ourselves to be in an internal state of calm, of reliance on Hashem. He says, like, it's right there with Bitachon. There is no Menuchas HaNefesh without Bitachon. And when we're in that state, so all of our bad midos are lying dormant. We're not biting our tongue because there's no need to be biting my tongue. I'm relaxed. I trust that whatever interaction I'm having with this other person is all in Hashem's plan. It's all for the best, which is a huge, high, lofty level to get to. And I don't want to pretend that I'm there, but like, I can understand it conceptually through the words of the Sifsei Chaim. And he talks about also how when a person hasn't yet acquired Menuchas HaNefesh internally, that a person, he uses the word a love, like it's incumbent upon a person to create that change from the outside. And he says through moving one's limbs, like trying to like acquire Menuchas HaNefesh, and how because he said like the rule of the external, whatever we do externally impacts us internally. So there are definitely ways where we can go about acquiring it internally, and that's the optimum, according to the Sifsei Chaim. But if we're not yet able to acquire it internally, then we do it in all kinds of other ways, which we like the whole world is talking about nowadays, right? Like take deep breaths and like walk out in nature and do some gentle movement and, you know, like all kinds of like mindfulness kinds of exercises. So to allow all that to start to impact our whole system so that we can achieve this place of Menuchas HaNefesh from the inside out.
Wow. Is it the Sifsei Chaim there that says that Menuchas HaNefesh is feeling like you are the only person in the Beis Medrash? It's only you, only one page of Gemara, only this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that is something that I've always carried with me as someone whose mind is always in a million places, like to just be able to be present here now. Like that is Menuchas HaNefesh, to only to have what's in front of me. So I'm curious, because now you're mentioning the mind-body work, and I would say, unlike you, I never particularly had this, I don't know if it's a passion, if it's hobbies, like to be in my body. I was always like that cognitive, loved reading, loved sitting on the couch and not moving, and reading and reading and reading and writing. And I am very, very well aware that if I'm stressed, I'll feel it in my shoulders in 10 seconds. What would you say? And I know that a lot of the work you do, you host, you tell us, Rena, your monthly Dan. I don't want to butcher what it is. So you tell us about them, and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. I don't want to just say what I do without prefacing it. Why I do this work this way. So as you're describing, right, a lot of us live in our heads, and I myself lived there for many, many years, which I believe contributed mostly to the pain, the medical issues, and the difficulties in relationships. Like, let's be honest, it wasn't just like a physical manifestation. There was an emotional manifestation as well. We live very disembodied, and we live very like disconnected from our whole selves. We live very much like neck and up.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is that the way to create the change is from the inside out, especially as women, especially, you know, men can stay in their cognitive a lot more and not have the same kinds of negative ramifications that women tend to have. Like if you look at the mind-body world, of course, there are men that are suffering as well, but it is mostly women who are struggling. In my experience, I don't know if that's like, that's just what I see from my point of view, not just in the firm world, like also in the secular world. And so I see so much of my work as trying to bring women back into our bodies, back into our bodies, back into our bodies, back into our bodies. And so I offer a weekly, what I call embodied dance, which is an intuitive reform movement. I build a playlist around a specific theme. So some themes are, let's say, acceptance or trust or compassion, crying it out. I did a bunch around Shibud Mitzrayim recently. So I had enslaved and then crying out to Hashem and then Geula. So and building a playlist around a specific theme and then using the words of Chazal or the amazing composers that are in the from world nowadays, using those words as kind of like they help us do what's called like a top-down and bottom-up approach. So top-down is the cognitive, where I'm like taking in the words and I'm letting my brain like process them. And then I'm using my body to create the movement and I'm integrating it from the bottom up in my body. And then I hear another song and now I have new words that are going through my mind, which create all kinds of new thoughts inside of me. And then my body has an experience from that, an emotional experience of some sort. My breath starts to become more regulated. My nervous system starts to calm down and we keep going like up and down between like what my body's doing and what I'm gaining from the songs and from the different thoughts in my head. So that's embodied dance. I run retreats, which are also like, you take that, we do similar work, but less free form or more guided explorations around specific themes. It's less of a personal experience. Like in the embodied dance, I'm kind of guiding the group and women are doing the work on their own. Whereas at the retreat, we're kind of all doing the work together as a group in the same room. I offer a class on regulation, which is much more of a guided regulation class, different exercises, gentle movements within our bodies. And then I work with women one-on-one.
Amazing. It's amazing because different.
Yeah.
It's different. So my question would be for someone that does feel disembodied, like that does feel like, what does that mean to be in my body? Like, what does that even mean?
Right.
What's a starting point to even begin? I mean, other than signing up for embodied dance, like, how do we begin exploring this space when it feels so foreign?
Right. And it is so foreign. And it's, I think for each woman, there's going to be a different entry point. So on one level, I would say, have you ever noticed, for example, when you're nervous that you have butterflies in your stomach? Or if you've ever been sad, you might feel like a lump in your throat. You mentioned that as soon as you get stressed, like within 10 seconds, you feel it in your shoulders.
Yeah.
So just even starting there with that like simple awareness of, oh, wow, there's my body's having a reaction to whatever I'm experiencing in my thoughts, my emotions, and my life around me. And there's some sort of experience that's happening. And it's valid. I give it validity that this is just like we, you know, people who are used to doing cognitive work start to become aware of their thoughts. They start to become aware of what kind of thoughts am I having? And so some people will either choose to reframe their thoughts. Some people will choose to let those thoughts go, let them flow in and out. There's different ways of working with thoughts. So the same way you bring awareness to your thoughts, can you bring awareness to your bodily sensations? And working with it, a lot, the same way that you might let a thought go, can you allow that emotion or that sensation to just course through your body? Let it, like it will not kill you. It will not kill you. It might feel like it. Well, it might feel very, very intense. But being able to sit with that emotion. And the metaphor that I like to use for that is imagine a newborn baby who was screaming. You wouldn't like, you might want to shut the door and like walk away from it and just let until it stops screaming. However, we know that the compassionate response is to hold that baby through it, right? Hold that baby and say, I'm here. Like, I'm going to take care of your needs. You might just need to scream right now, but I'm here with you. And I'm going to hold you through this until whatever it may be. Maybe there's some gas, maybe there's some colic. Like, I'm going to hold you through this until you're able to relax, because I want you to know that I'm here with you. And it's that same kind of attunement that we want to give to whatever we're experiencing inside. That same kind of presence, that same holding. To be able to say, okay, my body is experiencing some sort of something right now. I might understand it, I might not. But without having to go into like even too much meaning about it, just being able to say, I'm going to hold myself through this, I'm going to hold this experience and trust and know that this will pass, especially if I'm able to come with compassion and with love and help myself come back to a place of feeling more regulated, feeling more calm as a result of being with whatever I'm experiencing.
And how does the cognitive work come into play? Do you go straight to the body? Do you address the cognitive aspect?
So it's a good question. I don't have a specific formula of exactly how I do it. I think also, you know, every client is different. Every woman's coming from a different place. But I believe it can't just be the body. And at the same time, I believe that we give way too much weight to the cognitive. So I think both are important. And that's what I was describing in the top down and bottom up. We want to integrate both. And we want to make sure that we're going back and forth between the two. And what's amazing is if you come from in a cognitive approach, there's a lot of talk about reframing, right? Reframing the thoughts, reframing the ideas, reframing the mindset. When you go through the body, it's amazing how you can sit with a thought. Let's say, let's take a thought like, I don't have enough money, as we're talking about business. And that's a big concern of people in business. So let's say the thought is, I don't have enough money. So we might start with that thought, like person's having all kinds of worries, right? Worries are, the thoughts of the worry take place in our minds, right? So we start with that thought. I'm worried I don't have enough money. And then we take that thought into our body. Where is that thought sitting inside of you? And we wait. And the body takes its time to talk. It could take 30 seconds, a minute, for something to start to emerge. And some sort of sensation or image or emotion, something will start to come up. And when you're first doing this work, it might be very, 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 very subtle. Because you're learning a new language, right? Like if I told you, like, how do you say, I'm worried I don't have enough money in Chinese? Do you know how to say that in Chinese? No, right? So like you're learning a new language. So, you know, you might have to consult the dictionary and try to figure it out and play with it. And it's not something that you like get from one moment to the next necessarily. Some women do, some women really don't. And it takes time to learn that skill. But anyway, you find it in your body and you sit with it and you sit with the sensation of it. And then you can go very, very deep into this work. Like instead of jumping to like the next thought and the next thought, like really staying with the sensation of that thought and going back and forth between the two. As I sit with the sensation, the thought itself starts to shift. If you've done any cognitive work, meaning if you've like never worked on your mindset around money, then I don't know, maybe it would like stay there. But if you've done any work, then all that work is within you, right? Like all those reframes are already within you. You know them. You've read about them. You've worked on them. You've tried so hard, right? So they're there in you somewhere. And as you sit with the sensation of it, the thoughts start to shift on their own. And according to some of the theories that are out there today, 80% of the messages flow from our bodies up to our brains, and only 20% flow from our brains down to our bodies, which means that we can affect change in our brains like four times as efficiently through our bodies. And so as we start to create those shifts in our thoughts, but through our bodies, we're actually able to create that lasting change in a much more efficient, gentler, like you mentioned at some point, like it's hard work. It is hard work, but I don't think it always has to be so hard and so brutal. I think there's a gentler way to do it where you can actually really start to see the shifts happening, where not get, like when a client says no, it's like not so triggering anymore. It's like, okay, like Hashem has all the clients in the world. I don't just know it in my head, but I feel it in my kishkas, you know, I feel it in my gut, in my very essence, my very being.
Right.
Because I know that this is just one step forward on this path to Hashem taking care of me.
Yeah. Wow. I really never deeply explored the body approach or aspect, but I'm just thinking about my own journey. I would describe as moving from being in my head to being more heart-centered. And I'm just thinking about what you said. You described it as being in your neck up and then everything below that, which includes the heart. I never thought of it this way, but we talk about like thoughts and feelings. And to me, like those were sort of grouped together. But what I'm hearing from you is the feelings are so much more connected to body work. Like the heart is down there for a reason, because that's where the work lies, which is so, so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, I don't completely understand this idea, but something my husband just shared with me recently. So I'll share what I understood from it.
Yeah.
We were talking about this specifically about like, we always have this discussion with each other. Should it be more like body-based work? Should it be more cognitive-based work? And how I totally believe the two have to go together. And so he shared with me how we're talking about Malchus. And he shared with me how Melech is, can be Rashi Tevos for Moach, which is brain, Lev, heart, and Klayot, which are the kidneys.
Right.
And how we have to go in that order. We have to go from our brain to our heart to our kidneys, meaning our brain has to be like overseeing. It has to be the, I don't know what the right word is, but like it has to be the foundation, I guess, for what our body's experiencing. Because our Klayot, our kidneys, are where all of our feeling comes from. But if it's not being navigated by our brain, then it can go in all kinds of crazy places, which are not according to what Hashem wants from us. But when we go in that order of Moach, Lev, Klayot, of brain, heart, kidneys, then we have our brain, which is leading the way, and we're not neglecting a part of us, which is important. Like our kidneys are there for a reason. That's where our emotions, our feelings come from, according to Chazal. So we're incorporating that into our process. We're not neglecting it. We're just making sure that it's being guided by our brains.
Wow. I'm sold. I'm curious, Rena. I think I've heard this from you, which is why I have this question for you. I find that in business, we are in life always, but it comes up a lot in business, making decisions that feel very big and very important and very pivotal. And it can be really, really difficult. I know that I have, like I said, made that shift into what I feel like is being able to make heart-centered decisions. And it's just so much softer and easier, and it's not really difficult anymore. And I'm curious to hear from you, like, how you would approach that, making decisions that are true to who we are. You know, like I always talk about with my clients, it's not really about making the right decision, because what is right? And so often it's going to be like right and more right. It's not always right and wrong. If it was, it'd be an easy decision. How do you approach that?
Such a great question. I'm laughing because we're moving and we're at session in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And the whole journey of like finding this new place was like totally out of our hands. It really felt like Hashem was really just from the beginning, like just it didn't make sense. And I'm laughing because on the one hand, with finding our new home, it felt like I totally was reliant on Hashem throughout the whole process. It was like so clear, so easy to just fall back on and rely on, you know, if Hashem wants this to happen, it's going to work out, because it just didn't make any sense. And then on the flip side, the other night, I was like in a tizzy about a closet. I spent like 3 hours trying to design a closet for our new place. And I'm laughing at the paradox, like the dichotomy between the two, of how for the super big decision in life, it felt so easy. And for like the closet, it was like this huge, huge decision and so heavy and weighty on me. And I think it's really important to notice in life that the big decisions in life we really don't make. We really, really, really don't make those big decisions. Where we live and like who our family is and who we're surrounded by. Like these are all decisions that Hashem puts into our lives. It's the small little things in life that we feel like we have some control over, which we don't. But like that's where we feel like we have control.
Right.
And so what I saw with the whole thing with the closet was how important it was for me to notice how dysregulated I was feeling. I was like, Rena, this is a closet. This is like, come on, like some perspective here. But when I took a step back, and it took me like, you know, I was doing it late at night after like a really hectic, busy, hard day. It was a particularly hard day. Different things that had happened, and I didn't take the time to process them. And instead of processing what I went through, I threw myself into this closet and like got like more annoyed at the closet that it wasn't working out. And then I went to sleep, also didn't process it. And the next morning when I woke up and I was like, oh my gosh, that's when I started processing it. And I realized, wow, like you're under a lot of stress that day. And you didn't give yourself what you truly needed. And so the closet was just a metaphor for really what was going on inside, that you were feeling like you were in a tizzy inside. So you took it out in the closet and like spent hours there, as opposed to being able to just be with what you're experiencing, offering yourself compassion, knowing that the difficulty of the day would pass, everything was going to be okay, going back and relaxing into, for me, it's this image of relaxing into Hashem's arms, which
yeah.
Hashem doesn't have arms, but it's an image that like really works for me to be able to sense that bitachon. And so you asked, I forgot your exact question. How do we make decisions?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to that. You know, decisions, when we're in the flow of life and we're open to receiving, then decisions are easy. Hashem helps us make decisions. He puts the right shlichim in front of us, the right messengers in front of us. And we're able to make decisions. When we feel like we have to control everything, got to get this closet perfect, you know, that's when we're like, Hashem's like, it's as if Hashem takes a step back and says, okay, Rena, you think you're in charge here. I'll let you take charge. Oh, it's not working out for you. What a surprise, you know? Like, how can I bring Hashem back into the picture? And again, it goes back, for me, it's all about like taking that time to check back in with myself. Notice what my body and my whole self, what it's asking for right now in this moment, and how can I give it what it needs? Like it's screaming out like a baby. It is screaming at me. That's why I'm in this tizzy about a closet, right? It's not something that like, you know, I'm a mature woman. Why are they freaking out about a closet? Like it doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So being able to take that step back and just really reflect and say, wow, okay, like this is what your body's asking for. This is what your nervous system needs. And how can you offer that to yourself? And then everything will work out with the closet.
Wow. So, Rena, I'm thinking about decisions that feel bigger than a closet. Like,
yeah,
should I?
I know.
I know. And I know that the formula is going to be the same.
Yeah.
Should I invest in this $10,000 business development program? Should I take on this client or not? Should I take on the retainer project that's going to use up half my hours and I don't have the opportunity to take on other clients? It can feel so difficult to even know what I want.
Right. Yeah.
And
how do we know what we want?
Yeah. Like, how do we know what is, because again, is it about making the objectively right decision or the decision that's right for me because it's true to me?
Right. Right.
And how do we get to that place?
Wow. That's like a 10-hour discussion. It's easier talking about closets. You know, I think for me, I see it. There's like five main components for what I see as being an embodied woman who can make the decision that she needs to make in life. And in no particular order, I'm going to start with the nervous system. Am I feeling regulated? Like, first and foremost, am I feeling calm and regulated, safe, connected? If I'm not, then I'm not going to be able to make any decision. My prefrontal cortex isn't on board. I'm not able to think rationally or intuitively, feel intuitively when I'm in that place. My capacities are limited when I'm not regulated. So that's first and foremost. Am I regulated? Yes or no? Yes, then okay, proceed. No, then let's bring some regulation into my system.
Right.
The second thing is sensing it inside of your body, which you need some sort of regulation in order to be able to sense it inside of you, right? There needs to be that mother holding that newborn as opposed to like a toddler holding a newborn, right? There needs to be somebody who's mature and capable to hold that newborn. And so that requires a sense of being regulated to be able to hold myself through whatever I'm experiencing in my body. So I want to know if I should invest in this $10,000 program. Well, how did that feel inside my body? I have big nerves in my stomach. My stomach feels like it's all clenched up and tight. And at the same time it's tight, it's also like a whirlpool and going in like a million different directions. I'm going to sit with that and I'm going to hold all that. The third thing I would say is understanding what's called our parts. And this is not like a new concept. The Rambam actually speaks about this in Shemona Prakim, which is really cool. It talks about the different parts of our nefesh.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it talks about it a little bit differently than, you know, how it's talked about today, but still, it's different parts of our nefesh. And so there's a part of me that wants to invest in this program, and there's a part of me that's nervous. Yeah. And probably all kinds of other parts about me as it relates to this. So being able to identify all the different parts and again, identifying them from that adult mature place inside of me. So to go back to step one, if I feel like that adult mature place inside of me isn't on board right now, and be able to address those parts and know that those parts come from all our different life experiences. As an example, if when I was a child, I never saw my parents invest in things that were expensive. Like if a $10,000 program to me is expensive and my parents were always looking for sales and deals and there was talk in our family about like money, spending a lot of money is greedy. Let's say like if a person grew up with that kind of mentality, then that makes an impact on a person. So even if right now they're 45 years old and they've long ago left their parents' home, they're not living there anymore. But that experience of how their parents related to money and how they took in what it means to spend money on something is still within them. And so those parts that are parts of just memory structures, really, of like different thoughts that I had when I was a kid, emotions that are still within me that never got resolved. And so if those parts within me are freaking out about a $10,000 investment because money's greedy and spending money is greedy and we only buy things that are like super on sale. So then it's going to be really hard to take that plunge and invest in that thing or even decide if it's like worthwhile, because I'm so stuck on I can't spend the money that I can't even make a rational choice about whether I even want this thing or not.
Right.
So that was the third thing as parts. Number four, I would say, is understanding our needs in a situation. So why am I turning to this $10,000 program? What's my underlying need as what I'm hoping this program is going to fulfill? Now, the program might promise me, let's say, that I'm going to make a lot of money. But is that my only need going to this program? It's just finances. That's my only need. Maybe I have a need for community. Well, is this program offering me a sense of community? Maybe it's accountability. Is this program offering me a sense of accountability? Is this program offering me authenticity? Like, do I like the people who are running the program? How do I feel about them? Is that the type, like, if I need leaders who are authentic, are they providing me with that need through this program? And there are hundreds of needs that we can go into, but being able to ask myself, what are my core needs? What am I hoping to achieve from a program that I'm investing in? Then I can look at this program as a strategy to meet my needs. It's not the only strategy that's out there. There are thousands and thousands of different strategies to meet my needs. This program may or may not be the solution to those needs. So being able to be honest with ourselves about what we're actually needing. And I would say the fifth one is being able to utilize the power of our imagination in a way. And being able to visualize ourselves going through the process. So I'm finished the program and I've gained X, Y, and Z from it. And I see myself now on the other side of it. And I'm feeling ABC, and my business is doing, you know, LMNOP. and this is how, and I'm able to really see myself there, and it matches. It matches what the program is offering me. And so to me, if those five things are in place, so then it's easier to make that decision. It takes away it becomes much more of like a yes or no question as opposed to a long, like, drawn out discussion of, is this right? Is this not right? It's less about right or wrong. It's more about, is this right for me? Does it check all the boxes for me, for what I'm needing?
Such a robust answer. And it's clarifying for me something personally. I was deciding if I should invest in a program, nowhere near $10,000, but I was like, I don't know. I was very stuck in my head, like, what should I do? And what's the right answer? And I was like, well, I know, because I've done this work, like, I'm gonna ask my heart, like, I'm gonna make this heart-centered decision. And I, like, got quiet, got still. I want to invest in this program. I felt excited. I went for it. And I felt so good about it that I was able to make a decision based on what excited me and not what I felt like I should or shouldn't be doing. And then I regretted. Like, I regretted the whole thing. Couldn't figure it out. Like, I didn't take the cognitive approach, and I didn't make a decision based on what people advised. It came from inside, and listening to you just outline the five things, I'm like, some of them are missing. It was exciting, and I didn't explore the end. And it's just, that was so incredibly eye-opening to me.
Which is a learning experience, right? Like, even though whatever the cost of the program was, it sounds like you got a really good lesson from it. You got what you needed out of it, which is an understanding of how to make decisions moving forward.
Yeah. But I don't know if I learned that lesson until now.
Right.
Incredible. Yeah. I couldn't figure out, like, what is the lesson. Right. So thank you, Rena. That was really enlightening. Wow.
Hannah, I just want to emphasize that we're not always going to make the right choices. Like, sometimes we're going to make decisions that we regret. It's going to happen, even if we have, you know, all the perfect formulas in place and go through this five-step process, we're still going to make mistakes sometimes.
Of course.
Like, we are not Hashem. We are not Amala. Right? Like, we are human beings, and we're going to mess up. We're going to spend money on things we don't want to spend money on. In the end, we're going to regret. We're going to hurt people.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to hurt loved ones. We're going to, we're going to, we're going to, we're going to what I spoke about with the closet, like, it's just like a story of like a million stories that happened in my life. Like,
right.
Come on. I have emotions. I'm a real person. You know, I have days that are hard. Like, I struggle too. It's not all like rosy and, you know, life isn't perfect, but I feel like I have a path forward and I can get myself out of these sticky situations and ultimately fall back on Hashem. Like, if I make a bad investment in something, let's say, like it ended up being like a bad investment.
Yeah.
I can trust and believe that Hashem is going to help me recoup this.
Yeah.
And that this was for my best, ultimately, which again, we like talk about, we say these words, like it's for my best and everything Hashem does. But can I actually really, truly feel it in my kishkas?
Yeah.
And that's the difference between emuna and bitachon. Emuna is something that we know cognitively. And bitachon is a process that we really feel it in our kishkas. We're able to relax into it and really feel from the inside out that Hashem is there. He's helping me. He's guiding my every step. And to truly, truly sense from the inside out that whatever happens is really okay. It's really all going to work out.
I know that things happen this way because we're just being led, but I'm so grateful that we're having this conversation now because I just personally am connecting to it so much more because I've reached like this new level of not just knowing it. So it just is so much more meaningful for me. We could keep talking, I'm sure, for a million hours. There are so many things I would love to ask you, but we're going to have to wrap this up. I would love to know, what are you going to challenge listeners to right now? They're ready to make this practical. What action are you challenging them to take right now?
Okay, well, I'm going to challenge them actually to, before you go on to the next thing on your to-do list, because I know that you have one. I know it's waiting. Before you do that, set a timer for 1 minute, 3 minutes, or 5 minutes. And take the minimum amount of time, the X amount of time, whatever it is. And just sit and let this whole experience wash over you and allow yourself to feel it from the inside out. Because we listen to so much content. We take in so much information nowadays. And how often do we take the time to let it just integrate and wash over us? So if you can pause after this, even just for a minute, and allow yourself to sit with what you heard, with that one nugget that feels important to you and feels like that's what's going to help you move forward. And allow that to see if you can locate it in your body. Where is that sitting inside of you? It could be a comfortable feeling or it could be an uncomfortable feeling. Either way. And see if you can sit with that and let it unfold. Our nervous system naturally unfolds when we give them the space to just be. And that they're held like that newborn baby. So like take that imagery of that newborn baby and sit with this experience and allow your body to integrate it and send that message back up to your brain of what that next step is for you, what that insight is that you're really feeling from the inside out is what's going to help you move forward.
Amazing. And if listeners want to learn more, connect with you, where can they find you?
The best thing is through my website, which is renareiser.com, Rena with an E. And look forward to being in touch.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so, so much, Rena. This was, for me personally, so incredible. So I'm sure it will be the same for our listeners.
Thank you, Fana. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Rena. Take care.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. As always, head to lifeworkspodcast.com because that's where the party's at. Drop a comment, hashtag ILifeWorked, on this episode to let our community know that you took the challenge and encourage others to do the same. If you want to hear more about what I do for mompreneurs and how we can work together, reach out, Hannah@lifeworkspodcast.com. Wishing you a day of work and life that work to bring you tremendous fulfillment and joy. Till next time, I'll see you here. And again, thanks for being a part of our incredible community.